What up, Pac-12 fans? Welcome to another edition of Locked On Pac-12, where we give you everything you need to know about the Conference of Champions. Today, we will be discussing the good, the bad, and the ugly of the first week of Pac-12 play. It was a lot to talk about, so make sure you stay tuned because we have so much to cover, so much to discuss, and I will be joined by a special co-host.
You are Locked On Pac-12, your daily podcast on the Pac-12 Conference. It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Thanks for tuning in to Locked On Pac-12. I am now joined by Brian Brown from Locked On Utes, one of my favorite co-hosts. I know if you listen, you already know Brian is a regular on here. You will see him often throughout the week. This is our into the world, Brian. So, you know, we make this good.
Here I am, like, showing up in vacation mode, just having a good time watching football, and y'all making me get on camera now. So, like, I hope it's worth it. It's always worth it to hang out with you. For everybody else out there who has to stare at my ugly mug, this is what you get.
It's not that ugly. Relax, relax. Okay, but
it's only kind of ugly, not that ugly.
Not that ugly. Brian, you know, we've constantly talking about Pac-12 play and college football being here, but the NFL season is also about to begin, and nobody covers it like the Locked On Podcast Network. August 30th through September 8th, Locked On's Ultimate Season Preview is taking you through every team and every division with the help of Odyssey's Ross Tucker and Jason LaConfora. Follow the Ultimate Season Preview 2021 feed on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. Now, Brian, today we have to discuss not everything, because we do have some other hosts coming on this week to recap, you know, the other some other Pac-12 schools, but we will discuss a good amount of Pac-12 schools, football, the way season started for them, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And I love that we decided to dub this episode that theme because it's very indicative of what happened this weekend. So let's kick it off. LSU versus UCLA was probably the biggest game of the weekend, I would say, even amongst most conferences, not just ours. So first and foremost, when you heard about this matchup, who did you think would come out victorious? What were your thoughts for UCLA?
I think everybody probably favored LSU in this game. If I'm not mistaken, they were also the favorite out in Vegas. But we talked about it. This is a different UCLA program. This is a different Chip Kelly team. This is a team that has a defense that flies around, that plays with some experience. They've acquired a couple transfers that have really helped them out. We talked about the weapons on offense, right? You and I have been big fans of Zach Charbonnet since the jump. The transfer from Michigan has now shown out in two games and really demonstrated how great of a player he is. Also, Dorian Thompson Robinson, a big we're both big fans of him and his game, and I thought he did a good job of keeping UCLA in the game, and that really matters with a team like this because he's got plenty of talent and weapons around him to really make this offense roll, and it showed. UCLA looked like the team that was playing with more experience. They looked like the team that was playing with more confidence. They looked like the team that really truly belonged in the Rose Bowl. Not just because they're playing there every game, but because they have the talent, the experience, and the fight, the game plan to go with it.
Now, this obviously wasn't UCLA's first game of the season. They already played Hawaii, and now they're 2-0 to start the season. How do you think this is carrying out for them going into, you know, they're a game or two away from some Pac-12 play, but as far as their confidence goes?
Oh, they've got to be riding high right now. I think you've come off of two really good victories, one against Hawaii where you weren't really firing on all cylinders, but you still dominated the team. And then you come in and play a younger LSU team that's obviously traveling a long way from home in Baton Rouge and probably coming in with some baggage with everything that's been happening there with Hurricane Ida and whatnot. But, you know, at the same time, this is a UCLA team that has a lot of experience that really showed out in that game. I thought the defensive game plan was really smart, very strategic. They went after LSU's Max Johnson early and often. He's a younger quarterback, hasn't played in a lot of games. They blitzed the heck out of him early, got him rattled, got him seeing ghosts, and it paid off towards the end of the game as he started to make mistakes and really not play with any kind of rhythm. And in the meantime, on offense, they were the UCLA team that we really expected, right? Dorian Thompson-Robinson running the football. He was 9 of 16 for 260 yards, 3 touchdowns, and just 1 interception. That's good for a 70.8 QBR rating, according to ESPN's metric. You know, Greg Dulcich, who's a tight end that we've talked about in our preseason previews, had that epic kind of game that we expected from him. 3 receptions for 117 yards, averaging 39 yards per catch with a big 75-yard TD catch. You know, he had a really impressive game as well.
Okay, well, UCLA is, I would say, surprising some people in the South. Definitely surprising me, but I'm loving to see it. Even though I have Trojan ties, I'm still rooting for the Pac-12 to just do well, especially when it's against conferences. But now we have to talk about Utah while we have Brian here. You know, he's locked on Utah. He's a Utah expert, big Utah fan, I would say, prior to becoming, you know, the media person. Brian, when it came to Utah going into this game, I know you were very confident when it came to like how you expected them to play, but what stood out the most to you about their play?
I think really the biggest thing that stood out to me was the play of Charlie Brewer, the transfer from Baylor. He played there for 4 years. He was kind of the question mark to see how Utah was really going to be with him behind center and running the offense. And he was everything that he's been built up to be, the, you know, cool, calm, under pressure, operated the offense efficiently, did a great job of distributing the football around to multiple receivers. He was very efficient in the game, and it showed up in the numbers. You know, as he had a 62.4 QBR according to the ESPN metric. But he was 19 to 27 for 233 yards, averaged about 9 yards per catch. He had 2 TDs and 1 interception, the 1 interception being on a Hail Mary at the end of the first half. So kind of one of those things that doesn't really count, even though it counts in the stats column. But he was excellent, and he ran the offense well. The Utes controlled the football for most of the game, and they won 40-17 against a good FCS opponent. I don't think that Weber State's going to blow the doors off of anybody at the FBS level, but they're going to compete for a championship at the FCS level for sure.
And we'll definitely have to get a preview into their next opponent, BYU, but we'll do that later in the week. Brian, that means you will be coming back on here if you didn't know already. But before we get to the bad and the ugly of the Pac-12, it's time for me to tell you about Stat Hero. If you're into daily fantasy sports, this is for you. It's the first ever daily fantasy sports book that puts the player in control and winning within reach. Here's how it works. Stat Hero shows you their lineups and dares you to beat them. It's you versus the house in a head-to-head fantasy matchup. You name your stakes, winner takes all. You have the advantage. Stat Hero is showing you the lineups ahead of the time. Sorry, showing you their lineups ahead of time, and no one else does that. You're basically in total control. So Stat Hero is the daily fantasy sports the way it was meant to be, one-on-one. Go to stathero.com/lockedon, sign up for free, and right now you can get 3 times back on your first play. They're giving you a 300% match. That's literally unheard of. So go to stathero.com/lockedon. Now, Brian, hopping into the bad. It was some very bad going on in the Pac-12. Honestly, it's the first game, so nothing to panic about for a lot of these schools. But I will say I know a lot of Oregon Duck fans panicked in the game this weekend, Oregon versus, why do these things escape me? I literally had it here. Oregon faced who again, Brian? I'm sorry.
Got to watch out for those Fresno State Bulldogs. They can slip their mind easily, just like the Ducks did this weekend.
I have too many teams on my mind that I'm trying to focus on at once, and then my notes is kind of scattered, so I couldn't get to it quick enough. But either way, I do want to say Fresno State gave Oregon a run for their money in this game, which I don't know if anybody else was shocked, but I was truly shocked considering Oregon is, you know, coming into this season, expected to be a powerhouse in the Pac-12, expected to be a powerhouse in college football, period, especially with their leading man, that defensive end, Kayvon Thibodeau, projected first round draft pick. If you don't know already, I'm sorry to break the news to you that Kayvon Thibodeau did experience an injury in this game, and that might have been the most panicked moment of Oregon Duck fans and probably just those that are a college football fan in a while, especially in the opening game. You know, you hate that for any athlete. He did suffer a lower left leg injury, I'm sorry. And from what I've read, he's expected to only be out a few weeks, but you really don't know with that. Now, granted, the type of player he is, I would expect him to be back for sure. If he can have any say in it, he's going to be back. Everyone's very optimistic. His x-rays came back negative, so the injury seems to not be as serious as it might have felt seeing him in a walking boot on the sideline during the game.
Yeah, that was the big thing, is that image of him in a walking boot on the sideline. It brings out all the bad, the negative thoughts. But to hear that it's, you know, I think it was a foot ankle injury, something in that range.
Yeah.
And to hear that he's only going to be out a couple weeks is good news for the Oregon Ducks, because they needed him. They didn't look great against Fresno State, and this is not a Fresno State team to overlook. We talked about it last week in our preview of this game that Fresno State has a lot of Power 5 transfers. Ty Jones from Washington, Jake Hayner from Washington, a few other guys on that roster that really make this, you know, an intimidating team. But really what it was is that Oregon just wasn't great offensively at the quarterback position. Anthony Brown was only 15 of 24 for 172 yards, one touchdown, a QBR of just 62.5. Not great, you know, by any stretch. CJ Verdell, Travis Dye, not bad in the rush game overall, only 3.8 yards per carry as a team. That's got to be higher if you're Oregon. That's just not good enough to get the job done. You know, some bright spots there. Johnny Johnson, I thought, played really well. Three catches for 76 yards and a touchdown. Micah Pittman did some fun stuff in the return game. But overall, it was an effort that was matched or exceeded in a lot of respects by Fresno State. And you know, the Bulldogs showed that they're a force to be reckoned with, and they'll continue to march down the schedule in 2 weeks and play UCLA. So the Bruins will have another opportunity to show, you know, really how good this team is if they don't come out with their helmet strapped, so to speak, to use that favorite metaphor, and ready to go. They're going to struggle with this team as well. But I think it was a good eye opener for Oregon, even if it was just a bad look.
Right.
The game that close.
Right. Moving on to another bad situation, and it was Cal versus Nevada. Now, I don't want to say this was as bad, because like we've talked about this, we don't know if we have super high expectations for Cal this season. I won't say they looked terrible against Nevada. A lot of the game, it seemed like it was close. But nonetheless, Nevada is still a good team, but a team, you know, in a lower conference, less competitive conference. Maybe I'll say that instead of lower. I don't want to offend anyone, but a less competitive conference. And, you know, we do expect Pac-12 teams to come out on top in situations like this. When they're not, like, what did you take away that Cal still needs to work on?
It's the offense. That's the bottom line. You know, after the first quarter, it basically disappeared. They had 14 points and didn't score really after that until they added a field goal late in the fourth quarter. And Nevada started to roll. It was Carson Strong, the Nevada quarterback, the Wolfpack leader, who did a really good job of keeping that Cal defense on its heels. You know, he's 22 of 39 for 312 yards, two touchdowns and an interception. That's good enough for a 64.6 QBR rating. QBR is a little bit of a tricky one at the college level, because I think we're used to seeing those 70s and up for the NFL guys. College is a little bit different because you've got so many different things you have to worry about. But overall, it was that Cal offense that just sputtered there in the second, third, and fourth quarters. They couldn't keep pace with the Wolfpack. The defense, I think, did an okay job limiting Nevada to just 22 points. But if Chase Garbers and company can't keep the ball going down the field, that's going to be a problem.
Another Bay Area school who, you know, faced some difficult issues this past weekend was Stanford. They faced Kansas State, lost 24-7. Now, we've honestly been raving about Stanford. You and I are big fans of their athletes, big fans of David Shaw, but it seems like they came into this game not fully prepared for what Kansas State had for them.
It really, they never got moving. And I think Kansas State is a good program. They're a P5 program. They're out there in the Big 12. They've done this before to teams like Oklahoma. You just kind of expected that Stanford would be ready to go for this one, and they weren't. And maybe some of it was the fact that Stanford went with a 2-QB system, and that affected play. Hard to say, really, but they just didn't look like themselves, barely getting a touchdown there in the fourth quarter. Tanner McKee was 15 of 18 for 118 yards, where Jack West was 8 of 12 for 76. They weren't able to get anything going against Kansas State on the offensive side of the football, and Kansas State was pretty efficient there on, you know, against Stanford's defense, which that's an area that we thought, you know, we talked about the brilliant barbarians, right? And defense should really be their specialty. And the defense is where they've been great in the past, and going forward, they should be better this year. And they really weren't, you know, didn't create a whole lot of turnovers, didn't really do a whole lot to disrupt the Kansas State rushing attack. Kansas State had 344 yards total of offense, and 200 of that was rushing. And anytime you're giving up over 200 yards rushing, especially to a Big 12 team, that's a big issue.
Yeah. And really quick, we just have to touch on Oregon State. They lost to Purdue 21-30. Now, I won't say this was terrible, so that's why they didn't fall into the ugly category. It was probably one of the better scores of a losing team out of the Pac-12 this weekend. Oregon State is, you know, a work in progress. They had Sam Noyer in his Oregon State debut, and he struggled a bit. But again, this is the first game, not too much to be like super overly panicked about. There is things that they need to work on for sure. But again, I feel like we're in a better situation than some of these other losing teams we saw over the weekend.
I think Purdue is a more competitive team, I think, than say maybe a Utah State or some of the others that we saw cause issues for the Pac-12 that we'll get to on the other side. But the bottom line is that Oregon State went on the road to Indiana. They competed with the Boilermakers. They hung in there for a little bit. Despite some early struggles, you know, you mentioned Chance Nolan didn't really have Sam Noyer didn't really have the breakout game that we expected him to have. Chance Nolan came in relief and performed pretty well. You know, they're still waiting for a recovery from Tristan Gebbia. So are they back to having a quarterback controversy? I think that'll be the big question for the Beavers coming up around the corner. And how much improvement can they get out of that defense? You know, that's going to be a big question, because if you're giving up 30 points on the other side of the football, you've either got to outscore your opponent or you've got to find a way to minimize that. And they gave up a lot of yards throwing to Purdue with 313.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Coming up next, we're going to discuss the ugly. We'll continue to discuss how these teams are doing throughout the week. I have some other co-hosts coming on. We have a lot to talk about this week. It's all Pac-12 football right now. That's where our focus is at. It's really started, you guys. It's actually here. It's no joke no more. No talking about what ifs or what's going to happen. It's happening. But for those of you looking for a new protein bar, Built Bar is the one for you. It has 9 delicious flavors. It's super healthy. You really can't get better than Built Bar. Brian is a big fan. I can't attest to that quite yet. Still haven't tried it. Don't judge me. But I've heard great things about it, like having 9 different flavors, from coconut to coconut almond, cherry, raspberry. If you're a chocolate lover, they got something for you too. If you're someone who's a little adventurous and you like to try them all, they have a mix box for you. You can get it's a box of all 9 flavors, 2 of each. Now, not only is Built Bar tasty, but it's super healthy too. 17 to 18 grams of protein, low in calories, low in sugar, and low in net carbs. You really can't get better than this, everybody. So I would definitely advise trying it. I'm about to make my own order since I haven't got my, you know, free taste testers quite yet. I might as well just put my order in and try it on my own. So if you're like me and haven't tried it yet, go to BuiltBar.com and use promo code LOCKED15. You'll get 15% off your first order. Use promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at BuiltBar.com. Now, with football being back, it's that time of year again. You know, all eyes are on the gridiron. And as always, BetOnline is your number one spot for all the pro and college football action this season. Get all the updated odds, props, and contests, including online's biggest $500,000 NFL mega contest and the world's largest $200,000 NFL survivor contest, open now at BetOnline. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today to receive your 100% welcome bonus. And be sure to take advantage of their opening day super promo equals make a bet on the Thursday, September 9th season opener between the Super Bowl champion Buccaneers, and the Dallas Cowboys. And if you lose, your wager will be refunded up to $25 for new customers only when signing up and using promo code NFL100. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your favorite sports, from football, boxing, basketball, right to your favorite Vegas casino games. So don't wait and take advantage of all the great offers available for the 2021 season. BetOnline is your online sportsbook expert, so make sure you guys head on over there and use promo code LOCKEDON. Brian, now it is time for us to get to the ugly. We've hit the good, the bad, and now this is the worst part. And I hate this part because, unfortunately, my Washington State Cougars are a part of this. Honestly, it's the whole state of Washington. So it's some good and bad for me. You know, it's like a love-hate, bittersweet moment. UW. Terrible showing, in my opinion. And Washington State, not so much better. I will say there was probably more expectation in that UW game for UW. And I want to start there just because, you know, they're one of the schools we've been heavily talking about leading this Pac-12 season, being a contender for the Pac-12 North. And right now, the two teams that we've talked about the most, Oregon and UW, both have not really performed up to our expectations.
They have not. And it was ugly is the best way to describe it for the Pac-12 North. It wasn't a great weekend for the Pacific Northwest. It really wasn't a great weekend. Somebody described it to me in this way, that Washington State and the situation up there with Nick Rolovich, you know, is he on the hot seat? How hot is his seat getting? Well, Jimmy Lake just pulled a hold my beer moment and tried to really turn things around and get the attention focused back on him as Washington loses to Montana, an FCS opponent. And we talked about it in our preview show that Utah was going to handle business, or how Utah handled business against Weber State, and Washington would likely do the same. And oops, they didn't. And it's really, it's almost frightening to see how bad Washington was, but also Montana was not great. This was not like a game where you looked at it and thought to yourself, oh yeah, Montana really came out and rolled. You know, they did a lot of great things. The statistics for Montana were really, really bad, and Washington lost that game. Dylan Morris did not look like he had came ready to play. He was inaccurate. He was throwing the ball behind his receivers constantly. Just to kind of give you an idea of how bad this game was, there were only 10 first downs for Montana. They were 2 for 13 on third down. They only had 232 yards, had 105 yards passing, which in the modern day, like, that's insane that you can only get 105 yards passing, only average 4.6 yards per pass. But the key component here was that Washington turned the ball over three times, and Montana was able to convert that into scores and eke out a victory against the Huskies.
Okay. Here's the thing. I'm not upset about that, because that just means there's a better chance for Washington State to take that win in the Apple Cup, and that's really all I care about. But I will say that it's very clear that UW has some work to do. One thing that I remember standing out to me is in the Pac-12 media day, I was talking to, you know, Trent McDuffie, and he had mentioned, like, they don't plan on underestimating any opponent, right? No opponent looks like they're going to be easy, even though we had described UW's schedule as one of the easier schedules out of, you know, most of the Pac-12 opponents. And already it seems like maybe if they're not taking the opponents, maybe they're still taking the opponents seriously and just not as good as projected to be, or they are downplaying and, you know, not being as prepared as they think they should be for what they would maybe consider an easier opponent.
Yeah, I think Jimmy Lake's face on the sideline said it all. He had his arms folded. He wasn't really saying or doing very much. He had a look on his face that was almost smirky, like, well, you kind of get what you deserve with this one. And I think some of that is just Jimmy having to eat a little bit of the crow from his offseason spent talking about how great his team was going to be and spreading around how talented they thought they were and how you know, how they had the guys that they wanted inside the program. And you know, it was a rough outing for Washington and their fans, and this is not the kind of showing that you want to see from a team that's angling to win a Pac-12 championship for sure.
Right. So with Washington State, I will say that, okay, it's one of those tricky things because, unfortunately, it was the end of the game that became an issue. You know, Washington State was leading 23-11 in the fourth quarter, and then Utah State was able to come and rally and win 26-23. So I think right now the major issue is Washington State's closing, right? For those of you wondering what the situation will be quarterback wise going into the next game, it seems like Jaden Delora will be the starter against Portland State, according to Nick Rolovich, after Jared Guarantano, left the last game with an injury. It probably was tough for Jaden to like sit that out, you know, losing that starting position, but after everything he's dealt with, he's kind of lucky to even be in the position of play this season. So I don't think he's in a space of being too picky about, you know, if he got to start or not, but he is getting that starting chance, I'll say, in this upcoming game. It will be interesting to see how he plays there because clearly they were unable to close out that last game. What are your major concerns with the Washington State Cougars going into this next game?
It sucks to say this, but it starts at the top with Nick Rolovich. It's how is he going to get this team to respond? They've dealt with a myriad of negativity in the offseason. His choices, his decision to not be vaccinated became a national storyline. The narrative against that program in general, I think, really did turn on a place that is so much about community, so much about togetherness, so much about, you know, the heart and soul being there in the Palouse and how the program is run. It became a much more selfish storyline, a much more selfish narrative. Yeah. And that's really difficult for a team to deal with, especially a team that's still trying to grapple with the way Rolovich handled the initial stuff in 2020. And so now to come out in a game like this, to have a crucial situation where he should have gone for a touchdown and he didn't, really come back to bite him. Now, you can say what you want about the defense. They are still lacking some guys up front to really stop the run the way that they want to really impact the game and the pass rush the way they need to. I thought Max Borgi was almost lost and forgotten in some respects. They did not use their best player as much as I expected them to. And we can make excuses for Jaden Delora having to come off the bench, but like you said, he should be lucky and be grateful that he's getting this opportunity in the first place. And he didn't play that way. He played loose. He played kind of almost, you know, like not loose in like a good way, but like almost like flippant with the football and the way that he was throwing it around and going outside the pocket and again, a very selfish style of football. And that's not going to get the job done at Washington State. So they've got to find a way to find some cohesion, to find some cooperation, to build some togetherness quickly on the fly. Otherwise, this isn't going to be the last time that we're talking about this. And that seat for Nick Rolovich is only going to get hotter. And the biggest problem is it's not even the people on the inside or around the program that are turning that heat up. It's everybody else across the country.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. That was the good, the bad, and the ugly. Let's hope and pray that next week going through this, we have more good to discuss and less bad and ugly. I kind of like the segment, though. If it fits and we have enough to fall under this, this will be it. We definitely have to follow up with our ranking for this week. We haven't done that yet, so we'll probably have to push that to our next episode heading into the weekend. You know, the next weekend's games, and that'll be perfect because give me and Brian some time to really think about, you know, everything going into this next week's games.
It's a crazy weekend too. We had games tonight, you know, we're dropping a Monday episode. There's still so much going on.
And, right.
And this weekend was stretched out, games all over the place. It's great to have football back. We're going to get to the power rankings soon. Stay tuned, y'all. It's just going to get more and more exciting from here.
For sure. If you're into being out the new Locked On Bets podcast hosted by your boy Q and handicapping expert Lee Sterling. You can get daily picks, blowout specials, wrong team favored picks, and Lee Sterling's lock of the day. So follow the Locked On Bets podcast brought to you by betonline.ag wherever you get podcasts. Also follow Locked On Pac-12 and Locked On Utes on the Odyssey app or wherever you get podcasts. Subscribe to our YouTube channel here on Locked On Pac-12. We will be posting more and more videos of the podcast. This is the new wave now. So get used to seeing our faces because we will be here giving you our weekly breakdowns. Still to come this week, we'll have a lot more recaps from the weekend, joined by a few other co-hosts that you guys will see throughout the season. So yeah, buckle up. And then also you can follow us at underscore Cindy Robinson, at Brown Bear SLC, and then also at LO underscore Pac-12. We'll definitely be throwing more content up on that Twitter page. Other than that, make sure you stay locked on Pac-12 on the Locked On Network.